thank you for joining us again for Stories from War Cloister. I am your host, Jo Molyneux, from Winchester College Society. I'm once again joined by Mike Wallace, former Don, who's going to tell the stories of Raymond Asquith, collegeman, 1892 to 1897, and Edward Tennant, Chalkerite, 1911 to 1914.
Raymond Asquith, the son of Herbert Asquith, the Prime Minister in 1916, and brother of three other Wykehamists, was in the school from 1892 to 1897. In his final year, he was Prefect of Chapel. He won the Queen's Gold Medal for Latin Prose, and the Warden and Fellows Prize for Greek Prose and Verse, and in his final term, the Goddard Scholarship. He was a college man. He was Captain of College 6, and his brilliance took him to Balliol in the autumn of 1897, where he pursued a glittering academic career of excellence and the highest achievement. During his time at Balliol, he was elected president of the Oxford Union. In 1901, he became a Fellow of All Souls. And in 1904, he was called to the bar of the Inner Temple. Just prior to the outbreak of hostilities, he was accepted as a prospective Liberal candidate for Derby. However, the invasion of Belgium by the Kaiser's army changed all that. In late 1914, after volunteering, he was gazetted into the 3rd Battalion of the Grenadier Guards, a regular battalion of one of the foremost and oldest regiments in the British Army. He held the rank, of course, of 2nd Lieutenant, but at the age of 35, which was, and still is, relatively old for an infantry platoon commander. Initially, he served with the General Staff in France in 1915, but, much like Valentine Braithwaite, he tired of this and requested a return to the battalion and frontline service. In the autumn of 1915, the Guards regiments, both foot and mounted, were brought together in three brigades as the Guards Division. For the rest of the war, they fought together as a division with an exemplary record. At first deployed in reserve, and then in the line in mid-July 1916, the Guards Division was transferred from the Serre, where Valentine had served, Beaumont-Hamel sector, to the southern part of the battlefield in August of 1916. We are once again really in the thick of the Somme battle. Again held in reserve as preparations were made for a major assault on the German line in the direction of Flers-Courcelette, the battalions deployed to the front line on the 9th of September. By this stage, Asquith was a company commander. This means he had responsibility for upwards of 200 men. His company was number 4 Company, and it was a rifle company. The attack which the guards were involved in was due to go in on the 15th of September. And for the very first time, 10 tanks would be deployed in support of the infantry. Now, of course, as I'm sure most of you would be aware, the tank was a novelty. It is far from being properly developed as yet, very prone to breakdown, and the armour protection was not as yet adequate enough. However, they were a frightening beast on the battlefront. To the north of the Guards Division was the British 14th Division. Now, this was a new army formation. In other words, it was made up mainly of the Kitchener Volunteers, who had been trained through late 1914 and into 1915 as infantry soldiers. More often than not, the new army divisions would have a backbone, a spine, if you will, of regular NCOs and some regular officers, but by no means all of them. So in terms of feel and quality, it would be a very different type of division to the Guards Division. To the south was the 6th Division. Now, this would have been one of the original British Expeditionary Force divisions deployed in 1914, and therefore a regular formation, but, once again, highly depleted of its original professional core. The reason I'm trying to explain these things to you is that it's often a misconception that the British Army of 1914 to 1918 was one completely similar outfit. It eventually, of course, by 1918 became a citizens' army as conscription came in and the expansion of the army to 63 divisions, the largest the British Army has ever been in the whole of its existence, was quite phenomenal. And the professionalism of 1918 reflected on the experiences which they'd had and, above all, the learning capacity of the infantry soldier. Now, to return to Raymond. Opposite these three British divisions was a Bavarian infantry division. Now, they had a reputation for dogged defence, also known to have been operating in this area, and attached in early September to the Bavarian division was what was called in German a Jägersturmbataillon. Jäger, as many of you may well know, is simply the German for hunter, but in a military context, we translate it as light, as in light infantry. Sturm, so you can even guess from the sound of it, implies attack, assault, aggression. But the latter was a new concept in infantry war. It was made up of fiercely aggressive young men, specialising in the use of light mortars, the flamethrower, portable machine gun, and a heavy use of grenades in attack. They were an assault or counterattack force to be reckoned with. Now, the time is 6:30 a.m. on the 15th of September. Asquith's battalion rose from the front trenches and followed the British creeping barrage in the direction of Flers-Courcelette. They made good progress and attacked through what was called Trones Wood on towards the little village of Lesboeuf. However, they were coming increasingly under enfilade fire from the east and the south, simply because the two divisions either side of them, the 6th and the 14th, had not managed, for all sorts of different reasons, to make the same progress that the guards had made. Perhaps in typical guards fashion, the hunting horn of Lieutenant Colonel John Campbell, commanding officer of the 2nd Battalion of the Coldstream Guards, was frequently heard rallying the guardsmen of both assaulting brigades. Campbell would eventually be awarded the Victoria Cross. At some point, while leading No. 4 Company, Asquith was shot in the chest. His men put him on a stretcher to evacuate him rearwards to the first field dressing station. By the time he reached this rudimentary field hospital at Guillemont, he was dying. The guards were ordered to halt at 11 a.m. and hold the position, as they were in danger of being cut off at their flanks by the 14th and 6th Division's lack of progress. Asquith, in the dressing station, knew he was dying. He gave his whiskey flask to the doctor attempting to save him and asked that it be sent back to No. 10 Downing Street to his father. He died later that day. The flask reached his father some days later, and it never left his bedside table until he retired from office. He is buried at Guillemont Road Cemetery, where the First Field Hospital was actually positioned. And just along from him, there is buried another Wykehamist, Lieutenant the Honourable Edward Wyndham Tennant, known as BIM. He was also Grenadier Guards, but 4th Battalion. BIM was in Chalkers from 1911 to 1914. He was the son of Lord Glenconner and related to Asquith by marriage, his aunt Margot being Herbert Asquith's second wife and therefore Raymond's stepmother. Despite the difference in age, BIM and Raymond were very, very good friends long before they joined the Guards. BIM was quickly commissioned at the age of 17, which was actually underage, into the Grenadier Guards, and he served alongside an Etonian, Harold Macmillan. Macmillan wrote of BIM with great affection in his book, The Winds of Change, 1914 to 1939, very many years later. Both Asquith and Tennant were sons of families known in society as the Souls, S-O-U-L-S, which included the Grenfell brothers, also guards. None of these families had a particularly military tradition, yet by 1918, almost all of the sons had been killed. BIM was killed a week after Asquith while out in No Man's Land sniping. It is speculated that Tennant's body was deliberately brought from where he fell to be buried, despite their age difference of 18 years, close to his friend and brother officer and fellow Wykehamist, Raymond Asquith. I have had the great privilege of visiting their graves on numerous occasions and also of laying a wreath on both their headstones on behalf of the college.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Stories from War Cloister. If you've enjoyed this podcast or would like to listen to previous episodes, we can be found on your preferred podcast app, where you can also subscribe to listen to them as soon as they're released. If you want to find out more about the old Wykehamists remembered in War Cloister, they can be found at winchestercollegeatwar.com. The link is in the show notes.